When the man some consider the greatest filmmaker of all time introduced himself with, "My name's John Ford, I make westerns," he may have just been trying to be modest, and the statement still was a bit misleading. Fewer than half of his films actually were westerns. Still, many of those westerns have entered movie history as some of the very finest examples of the genre. And most of them were also set in the beauty of the Monument Valley, an area that came to be known as Ford Country. Peter Cowie, who has written more than 20 books on the cinema, has focused his latest on Ford's visual inspirations, John Ford and the American West. A lavishly illustrated book is published by Abrams and brings Peter Cowie to the Leonard Lopate Show today. Hello.
Hi.
In The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, Ford has James Stewart say, "When the legend becomes truth, print the legend." How much of John Ford's story is more legend than truth? I mean, even his name is manufactured, and people got the original name wrong as well.
Yes, they got his birth date wrong as well. But I think that he didn't consciously create a legend, but he was so seduced by that 19th century manifest destiny, which is enunciated in books, in visual terms, through the paintings of everyone from Albert Bierstadt, Thomas Moran, through to Russell and Remington, and goes, in a way, all the way back to Leatherstocking and novels about the opening up of the frontier and Lewis and Clark and all of this. And I think he was seduced by this magic, tantalizing ideal that the West, the frontier, represented.
Even though he grew up in Maine, he seems to be the most unlikely creator of a Western myth.
That's right. And I was interested in what David Thompson, your previous guest, was talking about, and the way the movies developed and the way an artist couldn't really declare himself. I think that the more I write about films, the more I try to dissociate the artist or the filmmaker's private life from what you see on the screen. And I remember Orson Welles, when I did my first little book on him back in the 60s, said to me, "I'll answer all your questions, but when you ask me about the mushroom cloud at the end of the trial, I'm not going to tell you, because it's up there on the screen. It's up to you to interpret it." And I think Ford was in private life a very cussed personality from all accounts. And so I've deliberately not tried to do another biography of him. I've tried to concentrate on this extraordinary visual legacy, which goes from those painters of the 19th century to Ford's westerns, and particularly the ones in Monument Valley.
Well, he made Drums Along the Mohawk, so obviously James Fenimore Cooper was an influence. But when you talk about those painters, how involved was he? Did he collect their art? Did he own a Remington?
Yes, I think he did collect Remingtons, and he said in interviews that he tried to base his color westerns, notably She Wore a Yellow Ribbon, on the visual style of Russell and Remington, and he asked Winton Hodge, his cinematographer, to use that color scheme.
He made many films that weren't westerns, and films like The Informer, Grapes of Wrath, have great power and rely on their interiors. But you say that he seems to be most at ease when he was shooting outdoors.
I think he was. I think he liked getting away from Hollywood. I think he liked those weeks and months in Monument Valley, where he met Harry Goulding and stayed at this lodge, which then gradually became, it was a trading post, and it gradually became more and more important. He began to invest in the Navajos. He began to bring work for them. He introduced them to people when they tried to get work. And generally, I think, fell in love with the heroic dimensions of Monument Valley.
And also of the Indians. He used the Navajos he didn't use just Hollywood extras like so many other people did. Victor Mature didn't play an Indian in any of his films.
No.
With Charles Bronson, he had real Indians.
That's right. Instead, he got Victor Mature to give the finest performance of his career, I think, in My Darling Clementine as Doc Holliday.
And he must have been thrilled, because if you remember the story about Victor Mature, who couldn't get an apartment because he was an actor, he said, "I'm no actor, and I have 50 movies to prove that."
But going back to your point about the Native Americans, I think that the only thing he cheated on was whatever tribe was being featured, he used the Navajos.
And in the same way, wherever he was supposed to be shooting, whether it was Wisconsin or Montana or Texas, he always shot in Monument Valley, which is in the Four Corners area, mostly in Utah and Arizona.
And that's particularly evident in his last Western Cheyenne Autumn, where they do the Indians go on a great exodus all the way up to the north of the United States, but in fact they're really just going around Monument Valley.
Now, Monument Valley is a national park right now, a place that attracts thousands and thousands of visitors every day. It was pretty much an obscure place until Ford made it famous.
I think it was until late 38. He went out there to make Stagecoach, and
so he had made other films. His first movie ever was a western, Straight Shooting, 1917.
Yes, but by the time he made his first great one, The Iron Horse, which was about the Intercontinental Railway, he had made 50 films, and I think a lot of people just don't realize, like the tip of an iceberg, that there was this vast a number of films being created at that time of the century.
Well, he won an Oscar for The Informer. Then that was 35. Then he did Prisoner of Shark Island the next year. Then he did Stagecoach, Young Mr. Lincoln, Drums Along the Mohawk, and Grapes of Wrath, all within a very brief time. Mm. How Green Was My Valley the next year. They were Expendable, 1945, and in between he shot a lot of movies in the war, mostly in the European theater. So he was all over the place. Why did Westerns have a particular significance for him?
I think he said once, "I like to find the extraordinary in the ordinary and heroism in the everyday." And I think that's a very nice quote, because he can elevate his characters into something of mythic proportions when they're in Monument Valley. And there's in my book I show a painting by Remington of a rider on a horse, and opposite a shot of Henry Fonda in My Darling Clementine, and it's exactly the same posture. It's almost as if he viewed him from the same angle as Remington was. And I think that you cannot do that with films set in city life, for example, or in a realistic daily setting. I think he wanted to escape into Monument Valley, where his heroes could really become something bigger than life.
Now, Ford was the hero of many film directors. Orson Welles called him the greatest poet the cinema has given us. He said he learned how to make movies by watching John Ford. Ingmar Bergman called Ford the greatest director who ever lived. And the list goes on. Akira Kurosawa, Sergio Leone, Clint Eastwood, Marty Scorsese, Steven Spielberg, Bertolucci, all the French New Wave directors. So why is it that Ford's work is seldom studied when Alfred Hitchcock's movies, wonderful films, are dissected in almost every film class?
I think that the Western has gone out of fashion, first of all. I think that's a big factor. They are still being made. I just saw in the trades this week a big new Western is being prepared. But
they're cynical Westerns now, as
cynical,
opposed to
yes.
idealistic Westerns.
And I think you can make a very interesting comparison with Ford's Westerns and Anthony Mann's Westerns of the 50s, which were harsh and bitter and unforgiving. And it showed that the explorer or the cowboy's enemy was not the Indian. It was his own kind. I think Ford really could see some in that genre. He could just see something which really enabled one to live out the romance of life and to aspire to things, and to in which good and evil were sketched in very primitive terms, but as a result of the landscape they could be, as I say, enhanced to a magical degree. So a lot of the appeal of his films is visual.
And it's interesting to compare the James Stewart movies with Anthony Mann with the ones that he made with John Ford.
Yes. Well, Anthony Mann, I think, did not have a sense of humor, whereas John Ford's sense of humor was very, very to the fore.
Well, I like them all, but...
So do I. Yeah. I love them all, but I mean, I think, if anything, I get irritated by some of Ford's schmaltzy sentimentality, by some of his minor characters, and by his barroom humor, but on the other hand, it's as in Shakespeare, it's that balance.
And John Wayne was the quintessential Ford hero. Did he it seems to me, he, as much as anyone, created the John Wayne that we think of as John Wayne.
We created the best part of John Wayne, yes, I think so. I think in Stagecoach and The Searchers, you have two sides of John Wayne, and it showed that he did have a certain range as an actor, and he was not allowed to run the roost. Ford, I think, had a respect for Ford because Ford had rescued him from Poverty Row almost on the 30s, and Stagecoach relaunched his career.
And then in The Searchers, he plays a character we feel ambivalence toward.
Yes,
he is not just a hero. And then Ford, at the end of his Western career, paints the Indians in a decent light after all those years of making them the bad guys.
Yes.
Peter Cowie has written more than 20 books on the cinema, among them The Cinema of Orson Welles and biographies of Ingmar Bergman, Francis Ford Coppola. He's the founder of the International Film Guide, which he edited for 40 years. He's also a sometime Regents Lecturer in Film Studies at the University of California, Santa Barbara. And his latest book is called John Ford and the American West, a beautiful book published by Abrams. Thank you so much for being with us today.
It's been a pleasure.
Folk would hum, they'd hum. When Liberty Valance walked around, men would step aside. 'Cause the point of a gun was the only law that Liberty understood. When he came to shoot and shed a fast, he was mighty good.